Right now, we are launching a new series. And Corby, let's explain it just a little bit here so we understand what we're doing.
So I had the idea, you know, we're all into different things up here. And, you know, this could extend to whoever at the radio station. We would, of course, feature it because it is our idea. But, we're all into different things. And some of us are into some stuff that we're like, how did you get into that? Why did you get into that? And a lot of these questions have never been answered. And I truly don't know the answer to what we're getting ready to get into.
Okay.
So we thought that we would dive into something just called, Why Are You Into This? Now,
yes.
P1s can email whatever their questions are. If you want to wonder why I'm into something, how I got into it, Bob, Danny, Ty, Mino, any of us, if you would like to an answer, if you've been thinking like, dude, why is
Bob into the EPL?
Yeah, right.
Why does he love golf so much?
Yeah, any of that. We will explain this to you at length. And the first one that we are going to features Danny, because I've always wondered how and why Danny Bayless got into metal music.
Into heavy metal.
Yes.
Growing up, predominantly, by the time my musical cognizance started waking up as a young adult in the country, with a graduating class of 33, surrounded by pigs and cows and weeds and rivers and guns and all that, how in the world did I get into metal?
Because, you know, right now, you know, you're in a soul band and you've been in an Americana phase and a rock and roll
honky tonk,
all of it. That's kind of makes sense when you peel back the Danny Bayless onion a little bit. The metal thing is really weird
because you didn't know me when I was going through this. And the way I would explain it, number one, it was a matter of what I was, number one, exposed to, and also the progression of, or the escalation of the genre. Like, discovering something that you're like, whoa, that's unlike anything I really like the way that distorted guitar sounds. Mm-hmm. And then, well, I need more of that. I need it to get heavier. I need it to be more of that. So the way it started out for me is growing up, it was Elvis, it was Marty Robbins, it was Merle Haggard, it was Alabama, Kenny Rogers. It was basically the stuff that my folks had.
And you moved around a lot, too.
I moved around quite a bit, but my parents were both country musicians. My mother probably a little more successful than my father. My father, a very accomplished guitar player, bassist, pedal steel player. My mom, a vocalist. They'd played their whole lives. My dad still, Phil, lives in Oklahoma, and he's still got guitars, and at the age of whatever, 85, he still plays. So I grew up with all that stuff. But when I started going, the thing was moving around is what sucked, because I didn't really ever develop any real friends for a long period of time until I settled down in West Texas and started getting to know people. And I knew I was going to be there for a while because my mom wanted to move next to her parents because her and my dad got divorced. She wanted to go home.
I didn't realize that was the reason that your grandparents lived there.
My grandparents lived two houses down from the house that we ended up building when we moved there.
Wow.
Yeah. So when you go to school with the same people and you kind of develop that trust that, you know, I'm not going anywhere, then you're a little more open to making friends, which I'd never done before. I never really had real friends because I'd live somewhere 6 months and be gone. So my best friend, Tracy, who's been mentioned on this show like three times this week.
Does he listen, by the way?
No, I don't think so. Okay. I don't think he still lives there. He's raised an entire family.
Is that the oil and gas guy?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Oil field supply.
Shout out to Tracy.
Yeah, man. So he had still has an older sister. So when we were in fifth grade, Sonia was, I believe, either a sophomore or a junior. And what do older brothers and sisters have in the late 70s, early 80s?
Records.
Kick-ass record collections.
Yeah. And the influence that those older, you know, you think that 4 years... Right now, you meet someone that's 4 years older or younger than you, and you don't even blink.
No, but
back then, man, that was a lifetime.
The difference between 11 and 16
Oh, my God.
It is truly, it's like a generation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we would go over and hang out. He was the rich kid in town. So they had a huge house, and we'd go hang out and spend a lot of time there. And when Sonia was still in high school, she was there, too. And you'd always hear music, and you'd see her guy friends in and out of that house, and they all looked like that 70s show or Dazed and Confused. I mean, that's what the world looked like then, and I remember it vividly. But some of that music was like, whoa, what is that? And I remember, Mino, we're going to use the cable, which I've already plugged in. When I heard, like, the guitar, and I knew that it was crunchy and cool. This is one, probably not the first, but it's one that stands out from that time. Like, what is this? This isn't Willie Nelson.
Probably
78. That's off Double Vision.
That's Foreigner,
debut
by the
album
way.
Was 77. Mm-hmm. I believe Double Vision was 78. Head Games was 79. And then Four was, I believe, 80, 81. So, yes, Foreigner's Hot Blooded. I mean, come on. That's a great
that's
rock
a cool
and
riff,
roll
man.
Tune.
Yeah.
So, listening to that kind of stuff got me into, all right, that's rock and roll. And it's a kind of a rock, that's a little more modern.
Did you have a guitar by this time?
Yes, I'd had guitars since I was in kindergarten, but okay. Acoustic guitars.
Right.
But this was these next three acts that I'm going to play for you is what made me buy electric guitar, an electric amp, and distortion pedal. But this was it when I knew, okay, this can go somewhere. This isn't just kind of pop. This is a little darker. I mean,
yeah,
come on.
And you know, there's something about this song that when you turn it up to, you know, 8, 9, 10 or whatever.
Or 11.
It sounds louder than other songs that are turned up to that level. And I don't know why.
Yeah, it's great production. It's John Mutt Lang, and this thing was mastered at a really high volume. And this album's just still, it's perfection. All right, so kind of getting introduced into the world of rock and roll. And then things kind of maybe took a step back a little bit because this is around the time that MTV came on. And when I heard this, this is when I knew that, okay, there's some real songcraft going in here. And also, these dudes look really cool and they're wearing cool clothes and they're getting chicks and they're from England. And this was over the radio. And that's when I knew, yes, I need parachute pants, and I need them now.
So did...
Now we're talking.
So Def Leppard kind of sent you...
This is when I knew I wanted to be in a band.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, this can go somewhere.
Man, see, I didn't know there's so many strains of metal. And I guess
just wait, Bob. Wait.
All right. I need to let you go, but I assume Def Leppard would be mocked by your type.
No, God no.
Dude.
God, no. Def Leppard rocked, man. But there were other bands that rocked harder. It could have just gone from AC/DC, and I skipped over them, but it was so commercial and so good and so melodic and such an earworm that nobody could escape it. Everybody loved it. And that kind of graduated. I went back to the dark side and started really getting into some stuff where even my friends were like, I don't know, bro. I don't know about this. And then
you're on your own over there, bro.
Probably in the next step and along the line of me breaking musically bad. And of course, this is Iron Maiden's "Run to the Hills" about the plight of the Native American.
White man came across the sea. He brought us pain and misery.
You know what I think of when I hear this?
What?
Tenacious D. This sounds like Tenacious
D. It does.
They're
obviously
mocking it.
And then I really alienated most of my pop metal friends with. When I discovered this band, and I didn't get in with them on the ground level with album one, but I did get on with them on album two. And this was a sound, Corby, that I had never heard in my life. And this was my life for the next probably 2.5, 3 years. That I drove from Knox City to Fort Worth and saw these cats open up for Ozzy at Tarrant County, and it's the best concert I've ever been to.
Who is
probably.
It?
Metallica. Off their second album, Ride the Lightning. Listen to that. I'm like, whoa, I can do that.
So what year are we talking about now?
This is, by the time I got into Metallica, it's probably like 85, 86. So I'm probably a junior, senior.
Yeah.
I'm about to leave high school.
Now, because, you know, you played football and you were on a state championship winning football squad.
Mm.
Was your football coach aware of your musical instincts?
Oh, God, yes.
And hated it?
Absolutely, absolutely. If you spent more time practicing football than growing your hair and plunking guitars, Bayless, you might be worth a damn someday.
Did you quit football to...
No, I played all 8 years.
Okay.
I quit basketball.
Okay.
Yeah.
It felt like Metallica was the line, though, right?
No, it went further when I moved to Dallas, Bob, because then I met friends that not only like Metallica, they took things up a notch.
Get ready.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. And then I discovered Slayer and all of the things that were around it.
Do you see the progression here, though, Bob? Like,
oh, yeah.
From really cool guitar riffs, you know, from Foreigner.
To just hate and anger.
To this.
Yeah.
Holy fuck, what is this?
Yeah.
I like Slayer,
I like the party. Yeah, I went from being an extra in Dazed and Confused to an extra in The River's Edge.
Right.
A lot of darkness in Little Dingu back then, Bob.
But the line I'm talking about is, I think a lot of young men would get to that line where they're like, okay, am I into Metallica or aren't I? Is it too much or is it not enough?
No, you need more.
And then, yes, and then you just keep going that direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Slayer is, and we continue on down the thrash metal road, right?
Well, we went all the way into thrash metal to the point where I got way into a lot of these bands. I'll play this for you. You won't have any idea who this is, but there's a group of me and my buddies that were way into this kind of stuff, too. This is DRI, Dirty Rotten Imbeciles, and their song, I'd Rather Be Sleeping.
A little punk rock in there, too.
Yeah, I would call this hardcore. But that is about as far as I took it. Because I got to the point where I'm listening to Suicidal Tendencies and DRI and MDC and all these other kind of thrash, punk, hardcore bands. And then things changed because I knocked up a Hooters waitress and ended up having a kid. And this also...
Always a breaking point.
Right, right, right. So about this point, Corby, this started becoming the rage across America. This was still, I considered this very hard rock, maybe metal to a certain point, but this is when things started to kind of quiet down for me.
Okay.
All right. This was bringing it back to pretty good songs and more minimalist approach to the music, and guys weren't dressing up and, you know, being ridiculous. It was kind of like, okay, these are good songs, but they're kind of still dressing like the Metallica and Slayer dudes and just normal street clothes, and it still kind of had a commercial appeal to it.
It's Alice in Chains.
Yeah, Man in the Box.
So,
it's funny.
Which
I'll have to cut off here in a second.
It's almost like this was your methadone.
Yeah.
Like, just to wean yourself off, you still got to have a little bit of it, man.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. And I, you know, loved all those bands, you know, the Temple of the Dog and Soundgarden. Love Soundgarden. Nirvana, not so much, but yeah, Pearl Jam. But Alice in Chains was my jam. And then after that, man, it pretty much just kind of went away, and I just kind of got away from music for about a year and a half or 2 years. And then,
got away from music.
Yeah, man. I was raising a kid, and it just, you know, if I was listening to anything, I was probably listening to the Seattle stuff about the time Josh was born. And then I basically got away from it altogether.
What's funny?
And what got me away from it was a combination of getting back to the roots that I, of the music that I originally loved growing up as a kid and doing it in a new way, which then you get your Jayhawks, Uncle Tupelo's, you know.
So I met you.
Yeah. And that's, and that's about when you and I met, was in the late 90s.
Mid-90s.
Mid-90s, yeah, 96.
See, yeah, yeah. But I, when I met Danny, we met like at a Ryan Adams show.
It was a Whiskey, it was a Whiskey Town show at the Green Room.
Yeah, which Bob, that's kind of the, you know, Sunvolt, Wilco, that type of stuff. And you mentioned the Jayhawks too. But that's, that was our first, and that's what I was like, oh wow, this guy's super cool. He likes the same music I do.
Meet me the year before, and you're going to be listening to Run to the Hills,
right,
and I'd rather be sleeping.
Testicle of the Beast, and things like that.
Just one. Can't handle them both.
Wow, yeah, okay.
And another thing you have to keep in mind, living in a small town, it was Bible Belt City. So
there was a lot of rebellion.
I was rebelling against a lot of that, but there was also this type of music that, like Duran Duran, like Depeche Mode. I never knew who the Smiths were. I may have heard a Cure song or two in high school, but you have to keep in mind, that was a real homophobic era. That was a real homophobic place to live in the middle of West Texas.
Totally.
So if you came to school listening to Duran Duran or Cyndi Lauper or any of that stuff, and you were a dude, that was girl music or music for the homosexual.
Right.
And it was just very anti-gay. And you just kind of didn't show that you liked that stuff. And now, I mean, like the Smiths are probably my favorite band. I think Duran Duran are geniuses. And I could listen to The Cure every day for the rest of my life, you know.
Sure.
And you know, it just, you end up growing up, your mind opens up, you get exposed to other types of music. People that you trust say, hey, check this out, that's something you may have never listened to before, which opened my entire mind up to the bebop scene and jazz of the, you know, 50s and 60s and early 70s. So I'm glad that this is over. I still, every once in a while, I wonder what that Def Leppard High and Dry record sounds like today. It might make it halfway through and be like, yeah, I was a kid.
Yeah.
Still sounds cool. It's fine, you know, but I'm not the most nostalgic person in the world. But that's essentially how that all started, was because of Foreigner.
Well, that is...
And the most
beautiful,
weakest song compared to Slayer and Metallica and DRI, Hot-Blooded Chicken of the Sea. I've got a fever of 103.
That is exactly how I envisioned this segment kicking off. Why are you into blank?
Now you know.
Awesome, dude. Thank you.
I love you.
Love you.
I know.